Hey everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown. We're a little bit late with this episode, we do apologise, but Sandra and I are going to get back on track this coming Friday so that we are up to date with Retro Raw. We're going to cover the March... We're going to cover the May 26th.
We're beyond March. We're way done with that old shit.
We are. Fuck March. May 26th, 1997, episode 211, if you're watching along with us on the WWE Network. And it's an eventful show for a lot of reasons, which we will get into. What I will say going into this show, if you're watching along with us, is that behind the scenes, it had already been decided at this point that Shawn Michaels versus Bret Hart is not going to happen at King of the Ring. So even though it's been advertised in this show, there's a couple of reasons that it wasn't going to happen. Number one is that Bret Hart's recovery was not going as well as he had hoped. So the idea was they didn't feel that he could do a full match, and also the relationship between Shawn and Bret is disintegrating by the week. Obviously, you remember a couple of weeks ago when Shawn had Shawn was in the ring when Bret was cutting the promo and it went off the air, and you know Shawn didn't get to have his retaliation, so that was like a big thing. And then Shawn made the Sunny Days comment, and it's been a bit of an escalation, so...
We've gotten to the points that we always see on the Shawn versus Bret DVDs and everything, when everyone talks about their feud. We're actually going through those points and seeing them happen in real time, which is, I think, one of the most fascinating parts of Retro Raw for me right now, is actually seeing it all happen in context and not just in little clip form, seeing how it fits together with the rest of the show.
Yeah, because I think what you're going to find over the next kind of 6 months is there's so much stuff that happens, a lot of which you might not be aware of, because you've kind of got the Cliff Notes version at the end.
I have the WWE history version of it. Not that that's completely inaccurate, but they're going to pick and choose what they show you for the most bang, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, we're watching Raw, and there are some wrestlers I've never heard of, despite listening to podcasts like New Generation, Attitude Era, and... You know, I've read plenty of stuff about history, and still we'll get wrestlers debuting who I'm like, who are they? Because they're never on pay-per-view, they're only on TV. So it's kind of interesting. Like, I mean, I know they talked about the Stalker on episodes of those shows, or on episodes of New Generation, but it never clicked to me that I was like, the Stalker will be the most amazing, glorious thing in the entire world.
It's interesting to note that Sid was scheduled to return to the company on the house show loop following this show on May 30th in San Jose, but he called the company the week before claiming that he has the flu and will not be back until the 28th of June.
Really?
That's what he's saying. You know, so there's been...
Isn't he... Maybe I saw it wrong in the network.
But this is what he's saying, you know. But, so it was funny looking back at this, because I didn't know as much information about this as, like, it's becoming more apparent why Sid is not used long term, you know, because he's continuously not coming back when they want him back. And he's losing a lot of momentum because he's not coming back, you know. So,
and notifying them such, like, short notice and not really being very communicative. And basically, I mean, Sid is insane. Like, legitimately, he's a crazy person. Mm-hmm. So... And I think that's something that's just very apparent. I mean, you hear all sorts of stories about Psycho Sid being Psycho Sid.
And on the Shotgun Saturday Night Show that was the weekend before this, Brian Pillman ended up calling WCW the Bush Leagues and talked about religion a lot, to the point where the company was pretty annoyed that he had went so far into religion.
Really?
So there you go.
So like way more than he was, than when he was just like holding a prayer vigil for Bret Hart.
Mm-hmm. More.
Interesting.
So we've got Raw coming from Evansville, Indiana, at the Roberts Memorial Stadium. What a name. The Roberts Memorial Stadium. It's just a nice name.
It's a nice name. It's a person's name. It's a memorial.
Smoothie King's shit. Stone Cold Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels have got an interview up first with Jim Ross. They're kind of, you know, arguing. Tonight they're going to have this tag team title match against Owen Hart and British Bulldog, which obviously was set up from last week. And they're both kind of just, you know, angry at each other. And as it looks like it's going to escalate, the Legion of Doom come out. So Legion of Doom come out and like they square off against them, and it was quite cool to kind of see the visual of LOD squaring off against Austin and Michaels. And LOD want a tag title match, and there's this bit where like Hawk's saying to Sean, if you win, we want a tag title match, and Sean's like, if we win, you know, because Sean's so sure of himself. And then the Hart Foundation come out to sort of stare at everybody, and that kind of is the opening segment. What did you think of this open to kind of set up the night's events?
I mean, it was fine. It was interesting. You know, you obviously have the contention between Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels. Steve Austin grabbing the microphone and saying that he's the captain of this team, and Shawn Michaels, of course, is like, who made you the captain? And Austin's like, shut up, you know, because he hates Shawn Michaels. And Shawn's like, nobody likes me, but the two toughest SOBs are going to kick some ass or something. Like, I didn't transcribe it exactly. I couldn't be bothered. But, you know, it was kind of your standard opening. It was interesting even just when Steve Austin was making his entrance, Vince McMahon is growling. He's like, oh my, here he comes. He's the toughest SOB in the World Wrestling Federation. And the more Austin cheats, the more people cheer him. Go figure. So it's still very much Steve Austin as a character is like, he is still a cheater. He is still an awful person, but people love him for it, which I think is just, I don't know, reflective of the culture of the time, people looking for an anti-hero, which I found interesting. But I didn't expect LOD to come and face off with Austin and Michaels. It seemed kind of premature. Like, maybe wait until they win? This seems a bit strange, but I kind of like it. I kind of like the chaos, and I was also very proud of myself as you were going through the description there, because I had written down, Hawk, I think, asked Sean for a title shot, which means that I told them apart for the first time on my own.
Trust me, as time goes on, you will absolutely tell them apart. Anyway.
Also, Brett's not even on crutches anymore.
No, he's standing now. So we open up with a tag team match with LOD against Brian Pillman and Jim the Anvil Neidhart. What's really weird, though, is like, so Hart Foundation come out, and then we go to break, and then we come back from break, and LOD are...
They make their entrance again.
Yeah, don't know why. No idea.
Like, they go back through the curtain during the ad break just so that they can make another entrance. I had that written down, too. It was very strange.
Mm-hmm. So LOD are doing pretty well. They dump Jim the Anvil Neidhart outside the ring. Got to go for the Doomsday Device on Brian Pillman. But before that, the Hart Foundation come out, DQ, and then obviously Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin run down. Chaos, chaos, chaos. And then there's this bit where like Shawn Michaels goes to baseball slide one of the Hart Foundation, and they move, so he baseball slides Austin by accident, and then they end up getting into like a huge brawl again.
Because of course they do.
And, yeah, I mean, I think that what's interesting is that what they managed to do here is, like, Shawn Michaels is a babyface, and, well, the fans are cheering him, and they're cheering Steve Austin, and they're such polar different characters. But they're also kind of similar in a way, because they're both from Texas, they're both kind of redneck guys, and I quite like the dynamic that they have of just absolutely despising each other, but having to coexist against this evil force.
They're really just such opposite sides of the same coin in a way.
Yeah.
Like, because to me, neither one of them is really a babyface, right? Like, they're both heels that people cheer for very different reasons. Like, the people that like Shawn Michaels are not necessarily going to like Steve Austin and vice versa. But between the two of them, they can kind of capture the whole crowd and get the whole crowd cheering for them against the dastardly Hart Foundation, right? And it's interesting seeing their dynamic. More interesting than I thought it would be. Like, I'm actually more into Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels having to coexist as a pair than I expected to be. And I thought it was, during this match, Vince McMahon explains basically how marriage works, because he's like, the Anvil married into the family, so to speak. Isn't that right? Queries Vince. And he's just, it's like, yeah, that's exactly what happened. He married one of the Hart daughters, and so he married into the family. I just like that he's like, he married into the family, so to speak. No, not so to speak. Like, he married into the family. He is married to one of the Hart children. It's not that difficult. Vince is treating this like it's this, you know, monumental thing that's just fascinating. It's like, well, I guess, Vince, whatever. Vince is just such a conundrum on commentary, but
he's lovely.
They call this Pillman's Raw debut as well. Has he never wrestled on Raw?
Mm-mm. Nope.
That's so fascinating,
because when he initially came into the company, he was gonna wrestle on Raw, and then he had an injury, and then then they had to do the kind of, they had to write him out of TV, and then now, then when he came back, he's only really just done like Heart Foundation-y stuff. He's not had a match, so yeah, this is his first one, which was...
So when we started Retro Raw, and he came, and he did the gun thing, right? Mm-hmm. Was that soon after he had come into the company then?
I'm trying to remember he came in like mid-96. I remember something about King of the Ring 96 and him. Let me try and remember. He signed a contract right before King of the Ring. And he was recovering from a broken ankle. So he was like doing commentary and announcing and all that sort of stuff. And then there was the thing where Austin, you know, battered him with the chair.
Mm-hmm. Because he wanted to talk about Bret Hart.
Yeah. I don't know if it was still the recovery from the broken ankle. I recall vaguely he had to have more surgeries.
I think it was. I think it all stemmed from that car accident, right?
Yeah, so I think he was just having problems. And he had to keep having surgeries and all that sort of stuff. So, like, this was the first time, you know, so we're now almost a year since he signed his contract on June 10th, 1996. And he debuted on Raw Wrestling on May 26th, 1997.
Okay. So it was actually his debut. That's just interesting because because of when we started Retro Raw, sometimes I'm not sure what all happened before that. And so I was just kind of surprised because I guess I had assumed that he'd wrestled at some point before getting injured or something. But yeah. I don't know. I just found it really interesting that this is apparently his official Raw wrestling debut.
This is him. Let's enjoy him while we can.
Yeah. But I liked the chaos of Michaels and Austin fighting. And I didn't know that they win at the end of the night. Like, I thought this was all just a setup for something with Austin versus Michaels. So I guess I didn't take it as seriously as I would eventually, because I was just kind of like, oh, okay, yeah, this is kind of fun. Like, I just expected Owen and Bulldog to retain and stay the champions of everything. But I don't know. The chaos was pretty fun and it worked for me. I still don't care much about the LOD, but I guess they're big and they growl. So that's good for them.
It's a thing. Sunny has her super soaker and she super soaks the Honky Tonk Man. JR and Jerry Lawler watch on from the there is a funny bit where like this she super soaks Honky Tonk Man and Lawler's like to JR, was that Honky Tonk Man? Like,
and JR goes, you know, King, I believe it was. This is amazing. You are completely underselling Sunny's search and submission.
Do you know why I know this is not real? It's because I know from listening to Jim Ross speak for 20 years that Jerry Lawler never prepared for commentary one time. And he was preparing for commentary here. This is a lie.
He was probably just showing JR like dirty porn pictures or something on those papers. You know that's what was happening.
Anyway, so sorry, fill the people in on what happened.
Okay. So the Honky Tonk Man comes up to Sunny and he's like, Sunny, someone said you wanted to see me. And she's like, see you? No, but I did want to ask you if you thought the wet head was still alive, which I assume she's like talking about his hair, but it sounds super dirty. And he goes, yeah, yeah, I do. Good, because the rest of you is about to join it. And this is when Sunny gets her super soaker, like loads it up, and then sprays the Honky Tonk Man. But she doesn't just get the Honky Tonk Man wet the way she did Jim Cornette. You know, the Honky Tonk Man doesn't just, like, fall down in a corner having, you know, been soaked by the Super Soaker. No, no. The Honky Tonk Man is assaulted with the strongest gush of water from a Super Soaker that could ever be. Because it sprays him down the entire hallway. I mean, this is basically like Sonny's taking a fire hose to the Honky Tonk Man, which was fairly satisfying, I'm not going to lie. And so you see JR and King in the foreground and the Honky Tonk Man and this, I mean, it's like a very obvious effect of Honky Tonk Man being sprayed down this hallway in very comedic fashion. And that's when, you know, King and JR are just like, is that the Honky Tonk Man? You know, King, I believe it was. And then Sunny reminds us that wetter is better. It's glorious. It's even better than the Cornette one, I thought.
It was better. We then go into... We have a promo from Paul Bearer. He talks about the Undertaker's secret, and it's in a safety deposit box. Even if something happens to him, it's still going to be there. And by the end of the night, you know, Undertaker has to decide whether he's going to come home to Paul Bearer or his secret's going to be known. So we will come back to that. Paul Bearer, glory. What I love about it is, like, Paul Bearer, when he got the, like, the flame in his face and all that sort of stuff. Like, he doesn't look the same. Doesn't look the same man, you know, anymore.
No, like, he came back and his hair is like...
Stopped dyeing his hair, stopped putting the makeup on, shaved the mustache off, like...
He even says his hair has changed, his voice has changed, you know, I mean, that fireball had a very big effect on him. I mean, it still does look like the scars are going to be largely emotional.
His are not emotional, has a real look, he looks completely different now.
Well, he does look completely different, I'm just saying in terms of scarring, though. I mean, it's not like this is actual scarring, it's like your hair's changed color, and your voice is different. But that's not a scar, like, that's not a burn scar, that's just a change in demeanor.
Yeah, no, that's true. What I thought was interesting was, so we have that, and we'll come back to it. But, like, so we get Bob Hawley against D'Lo.
What I like about this pallbearer thing, though, mm-hmm. I like that he says, the secret, oh, yes, the secret is safe this evening with my attorney in my safe deposit box, and only he has the key to it, because he knows the Undertaker's going to fuck him up, right? Mm-hmm. So pallbearer was very smart here and decided to put the secret somewhere else and leave it in the care of someone who, you know, should pallbearer meet his doom at the hands of the Undertaker, the secret can still be revealed.
Very smart.
He's a mastermind.
Very smart. I wish pallbearer could, like, speak to some of the current roster.
Yeah, seriously.
So we get Bob Hawley versus D'Lo Brown in the Nation of Domination, but we've never...
Vroom, been... vroom. I love Bob Hawley's music.
But we've never been told... who D'Lo Brown is. He's always just been in a suit, and this is like his debut. This is finally the first time we ever find out this is D'Lo Brown, you know. And he looks very angry at the world,
mm-hmm.
and he beats Bob Hawley in about 3 minutes, and I thought he looked pretty good in his debut.
I think he did. I mean, it was enjoyable enough. I don't really remember much about this match, but there wasn't that much to remember, I don't think. I mean, you see footage of Bob Hawley beating Owen Hart last week to maybe give us the illusion that maybe Bob Hawley will beat D'Lo Brown. He will not beat D'Lo Brown here. I mean, most of what I remember is Farouk on commentary for this.
Oh my God. Farouk was just like, he was giving it hard to Vince McMahon about, like, you know, there's been no black WWF champion, and he was basically making it that Vince is a racist, and Vince was kind of like, you know, well, Vince was trying to defend it, and he was like, well, I'm not saying there's not racism in this country, but, like, you know, it's not here in the World Wrestling Federation and blah, blah, blah. And it was interesting to listen to.
It was actually very fascinating because Vince is very clearly out of his depth here. Like, he's obviously approved this storyline. He's written this storyline.
Bearing in mind that 9 years after this, eight or nine years after this, Vince McMahon on live pay-per-view does walk up to Booker T and say, what's up, my nigger?
Yes. Yes, he does.
I thought that was... relevant to put in there.
Yeah. Well, Vince is very clearly out of his depth, but he's, I mean, credit where credit's due. The storyline is edgy and the storyline is very current, right? And Farouk being allowed to say the things that he's being allowed to say is just fascinating to me, and I'm really glad that he is. I mean, Farouk's talking about slaves, and he's asking Vince, you know, what did you think when you heard that I was the number one contender? He's like, you were afraid that there might finally be a first black world champion, and Vince is like, I wasn't afraid. And you know, Farouk's like, look in the ring, America wants to see a black man versus a white man, that's what they want to see right now, you know. And Vince asks Farouk if he's trying to patronize the blacks. That was his language, which just proves again that Vince McMahon is obviously okay with the storyline happening but has no idea how to handle it. And then, you know, he talks about Farouk playing the race card again, and that it's just interesting to me that that's the babyface perspective, is that Farouk is playing the race card and, you know, oh, that dastardly black person trying to play up the fact that he's black. And and that, like, Farouk is so the babyface in this situation to me. Like, obviously his actions in the ring are not. Like, the Nation of Domination is always attacking and always interfering in matches and being very heelish, but all of the racial stuff that they're saying, I'm so on the Nation of Domination side here, and it's fascinating. And I mean, Farouk goes so far as to say, you know, yeah, you're my friend on commentary at work, but what happens when I move in next to you? I become a black man.
Oh yeah,
and I become a black man who lives next to you.
You like it when I wash your car, but not when my son goes to the same school, or right? Like, oh, it's
very, very deep stuff.
And it's funny because back in the 90s, like, I don't think a lot of people really thought about this because it was kind of just that was the way the culture of the country was. Whereas now, mm-hmm. like, because we've fixed a lot of things about the world in a good way, that, like, now you look back and you go, fuck, that's just, This is pretty ahead of its time, to be honest. Like, it was...
Like, it's interesting, and I think there's a lot more discussion now with social media, and, you know, people talk about a lot of racial issues, not necessarily on television the way this is happening. Like, I can't even really see them doing this kind of storyline now, because what they're doing right now currently with, you know, Jinder and Randy Orton or whatever, like, they're trying to play up him being foreign, and it seems very sanitized compared to this. Like, this actually feels very real. This feels very like this is coming from Farooq. And we saw it last week with Ahmed Johnson being asked the same questions. Ahmed wasn't all friendly with Vince McMahon just because he's a babyface. He was like, why are you asking me this fucking question? But okay, I'll tell you what I think because I'm Ahmed Johnson and that's what I do, right? But no, I'm finding the whole thing very fascinating because it's actually deep stuff and they're actually tackling real issues here.
It's pretty interesting. I did feel bad for The Undertaker, who we cut to next, when he's doing his promo.
Poor guy.
And then Vince is like, we didn't really get any of that, Undertaker. Can you tell us that again?
There was no audio. Like, he's just talking, and you can sort of hear, like, muffled mumbling a little bit. And then there's, like, a random graphic of Lawler versus Goldust that interrupts Undertaker, and then it goes back to him, and then he finally gets to cut his promo. I did feel bad for him here, because that wasn't his fault that there was no audio, obviously.
Yeah, and, like, he's trying to deliver this, like, really serious thing about, like, the secret and all that, so...
Well, because, like, in 1 hour's time, he has to make a decision that affects the rest of his life, but we can't hear him talk about it. Poor
he
Undertaker.
He talks about, like, he's got 2 weeks to worry about Farooq, but tonight he's torn about a decision that could affect the rest of his life. Now, we are coming up next to the segment that is probably going to, you know, be very interesting to talk about. Before we do... In between the promo and the match, there is a great segment where they show you the King of the Ring inflatable chairs that you can buy.
Oh my gosh.
I really want one of these. So badly.
I think the King of the Ring chair was after Jerry Lawler.
It was after the promo, but before the match. But I'm just talking about it now as a nice little
get it out of the
thing.
Way. Yep.
Not get it out of the way. Appeal to the listeners if they want to send me that chair, if they bought one at the time. Feel free.
I want to know if any of our listeners paid $59.99 plus $11 shipping and handling for a King of the Ring inflatable chair. If you did, come clean. Show us your shame.
Come clean. There's no shame. Listen, folks. Listen to this.
There's a little shame. $59.99 plus $11 shipping and handling for a King of the Ring inflatable chair. That is hideous.
You bought a King of the Ring, great King of the Ring inflatable chair for $59, and I bet you still have it. $59.99. And I bet you still have it. But Sondra here has paid for alcohol that she doesn't have to show for it now. She doesn't have to show for it. You still have your King of the Ring inflatable chair. So don't you let her and her poor life choices dictate why you can't have a collectible item that in a good 10 years will be worth at least $69.99.
If it doesn't pop first.
So, Jerry Lawler...
I'll choose my alcohol over a King of the Ring inflatable chair. I mean, I guess an inflatable chair is handy in the sense that you can deflate it, so easy storage for the King of the Ring inflatable chair. I am fascinated by the King of the Ring inflatable chair, I will say, because they show these things like 3 times throughout this episode of Raw. Like, Sable comes out and humps one at one point. Like,
because they've only got a 2-week window to sell it.
Didn't they think of that sooner? If you're going to charge that much for an inflatable chair, like, it's just, it's baffling that it costs that much.
Also,
I mean,
like,
I guess,
how long would it take to ship to you at that point? Like, you'd probably get it after King of the Ring.
Maybe. Well, I mean, I guess it wouldn't be that difficult of shipping, though, right? Because I don't know why they're charging $11 for shipping and handling. It's something that's just a plastic thing that can fold up. It's not like it's going to be super heavy. It would be in just, like, a standard box. I don't know why that's $11 to ship and handle it.
So, with that in mind...
These two men in this ad, though, are talking about who's the king, and then someone's dressed as Elvis, and he says that he's the king, and it's hilarious. And then the guy in the straw hat's like, thank you very much. And Elvis is like, that's my line. Ha, 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 ha. I love all of this.
Okay, so let's talk about the big segment. So, Jerry Lawler's going to face Goldust in a King of the Ring qualifier, but we cut back to Jerry Lawler backstage, who is... being interviewed about Goldust and Marlena. Now, he first of all talks about, you know, Goldust's dad. Old Dust doesn't talk to him because he dresses like a flaming fag.
I have the whole thing written down. You want me to read the whole thing?
Go for it.
Okay. So I was so angry transcribing this. So furious.
But you knew that you had to transcribe it because you wanted to completely tear it apart in its film form.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, first of all, Jerry Lawler says, it seems like our sissy friend is having a little identity crisis. That's how he starts out. And then he says, well, we all saw you out here with tears running down your face, wondering why your old man, old Dust, don't love you anymore. Well, I know Dusty Rhodes, and he told me why. It's because you married the biggest gold digger in Georgia. Then you put on a woman's wig, and you went around the ring kissing men like a flaming fag. At this point, the crowd cheers. Well, let me tell you something. They're all going to have tears running down their face tonight. Bring that gold digger to the ring and bring that little brat Dakota with her. Because I'm going to tell you this. They're all going to have tears running down their faces when I'm through with you. And what'd you name that little brat? Dakota? You should have named her Target, because I heard everybody in Atlanta had a shot at it. Ha 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 ha. And then the crowd cheers again, loudly.
Now, I had never heard this promo before. Because I just, like, again, this is, like, 3 weeks before we finally got Sky TV. So I was only watching, like, the weekend shows, so I would see clips from Raw.
You mean they didn't show this as a clip from Raw?
Not on LiveWire with Michael Cole. Or with Todd Pettengill, sorry. What's interesting about it is that, like, and I'm trying to come at this from a different perspective before you annihilate it, as you rightly should. Jerry Lawler is a heel. Okay, so mm-hmm. him cutting this promo, I don't hugely have a problem with because he is a heel. He's the bad guy. So if he's saying this stuff and he's the bad guy, and then the good guy's going to get to come and have his comeuppance on him, fair enough. My issue is more if you know that Jerry Lawler is from Evansville, well, used to do a lot of stuff in Evansville, Indiana, USWA is there.
It's part of the Memphis like circuit the Memphis that loop, he yeah. did.
You knew this in advance, and you knew you had weeks to do King of the Ring qualifiers. You could have done this match last week, you could have done it next week. You didn't have to do it right here, and I feel like doing it here kind of shat all over these Goldust vignettes that you did, which I don't think worked that well anyway, but I think that you really killed them by having him do this promo, and then the crowd just loving Jerry Lawler, you know? And I think that was one of the main problems. But feel free to talk about the promo.
This promo is atrocious for every possible reason. Like, I know that Jerry Lawler's a bad guy, and oh boy, is he a bad guy, right? Saying stuff like this. I cannot believe that WWF let this go on television. Later on, when they show, I think it's a little bit later on, before the match maybe, they show the confrontation where Jerry Lawler asked Goldust if he was queer, right? And Goldust is like, no. So, yeah, you can cheer me now because I'm not gay, right? That was the whole motive behind that story, Vince, which I wasn't a fan of.
Vince McMahon. Well, that was then. This is now. Great, Vince. Cheers for that.
Yeah, great, Vince. But I find it so interesting that they bleep the word queer, but they let Jerry Lawler say fag on live television.
Yep.
Like, and that's, I don't like that. You know, the whole impetus is like, oh yeah, you know, you married the biggest gold digger in Georgia. I mean, fine, like, he's gonna say shit about Marlena. He's a bad guy, of course he's gonna say shit about Marlena. And then, you know, he calls Goldust a fag. And isn't that sort of undercutting everything that they're trying to do with Goldust right now? Mm-hmm. Like, everything? Especially if the crowd is gonna cheer it? Like, I don't think 1997 is ready to not agree with Jerry Lawler, regardless of where this took place. I am very curious to know if another crowd in another city would have cheered this. Because I feel like there's a lot of homophobia in the WWF still at this point, and a lot of homophobia in culture. And I think one of the biggest problems with that language, and I'll get to the part that annoys me even more about this promo, but I think one of the biggest problems with using that language is, I mean, first of all, it's atrocious to allow that on television when you're bleeping the word queer but allowing the word fag and letting Jerry Lawler say these things, which he clearly believes. But I'm not so sure that other crowds would have booed Jerry Lawler here. I think at most they might have just not reacted so strongly, because it seems like they're still kind of playing on, I mean, if the whole story is, no, but he's not queer and that's why you can cheer him, that's one of the big problems I have with this angle, right? Is like, even if he is gay, he could still be a hero. Or if he's bisexual, I mean, he could still very well be bisexual and be married to Marlena and have a daughter. That's mm-hmm. an actual thing that can actually happen in real life, I promise. But my bigger problem with this promo wasn't the flaming fag issue, because, okay, Jerry Lawler's a disgusting cretin of a human, and of course he's going to say that. But then the part where he talks about Dakota is just so uncalled for. So uncalled for. And I am glad, to be fair, I'm glad that Goldust attacked him right at the beginning of this match for saying this. Saying that he should have named Dakota Target because everybody in Atlanta had a shot at it. That little girl is 3 years old. Three. And he's talking about everyone having a shot at her? Or at it, excuse me. He says at it. That is reprehensible. And I was so angry.
But it doesn't
so
even make sense.
Off. It doesn't. The only way it makes sense is if everyone has tried to rape that little girl.
Wasn't he trying to say that basically everyone would have had a shot at Marlena so could have produced Dakota? Is that what he's trying to say? That just hasn't.
I don't know. That's not how I took it.
Because, I mean, I can't.
Is that what he's trying to say?
That's what I took that he meant and just worded it horrendously.
Because I definitely took it as, like, everyone's had a shot at that little girl. And that's what I thought he was saying. And I was like, she is 3 years old. And Jerry Lawler, with your history, maybe you shouldn't be making comments about three-year-old girls. Maybe that's ill-conceived.
Yeah. I mean, it's a problem. I mean, my thoughts kind of tie into the match as well, if we can kind of talk about both at the same time.
But sure. I mean, the crowd cheering, it just makes it even worse, because I was so angry at Evansville. And I understand that, you know, WWF was so stupid to put this on in this city. So stupid. And Vince McMahon, though, Vince doesn't denounce it either. Vince is on commentary. Vince could be like, I mean, this is disgusting. This is da-da-da. He could cut it off. He could do whatever. He just sort of sighs. And he's like, all right. And moves on to the King of the Ring chair ad. Like, he has plenty to say about Farouk playing the race card and how awful and dastardly that is, but nothing to say about Lawler being an utter piece of trash.
It's a problem. And I think the biggest problem is what city this was in, because I think if this had been in a different city, I don't think they would have cheered Jerry Lawler. I don't think they would have booed him that much either. I think they would have probably been like a silence.
I don't think it would have been effective in any city. I think it was completely counterproductive in this city.
I think this particular segment killed what they were trying to do with Goldust.
Yeah.
Like,
especially with the crowd, like, cheering Lawler. And did they, I don't know if they really booed Goldust, but they were definitely on Lawler's side here.
Well,
they
had Lawler do things like he hit the pile driver, which was like his big move and all this sort of stuff. And, like, I mean, Lawler worked as a heel, which was made even weirder because, like, he delivered the promo as a heel and he worked as a heel in the match, but the crowd, no matter what he did, were just cheering him. And then, like, JR's trying to recover it on commentary, saying, oh, you know, well, this is the old stomping ground of the USWA and blah, blah, blah. And I thought the commentary team did as good a job as they could to cover up for people cheering, but I can't in my head, like, Say for whatever reason you go, okay, they have to do Goldust and Jerry Law in this town on this night. Fair enough, but, like, just don't do the promo. Just don't do the fucking promo. Like, the promo's a bad enough idea in concept anyway, you know? Like, it's such a terrible idea for a promo. But then, like, to do it in a city where you know he's going to get cheered, it's like, it's just so classless, you know? Like,
nothing that's a good idea about that. There's absolutely nothing that's a good idea about that. And I don't even think doing this match in this city is a good idea either, because they should know this. If they're on commentary covering it up and saying, oh yeah, this is USWA territory, you know, it's a frequent stop there, so that's why they're cheering him. They know that. They know that going into this. Why wouldn't they have this match last week or next week?
And then, like, in the end, like, Lawler gets the win by, like, you know, holding his feet on the ropes and, like, pinning Goldust out of nowhere. And then after the match, Lawler, like, goes to run away and Goldust goes after him, and then Goldust, like, punches him and he rolls down the aisle, and then Marlena steps over him. But the issue was, like, see if this exact scenario had taken place in a different city, I think that it would still have been very big damage. But I think you could have recovered parts of it because you had Goldust and Marlena getting the one up in the end, you know, like Marlena's stepping over him like he's a bit of trash and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem was, like, even when you did the post-match angle, which was your attempt to try and get Goldust a little bit of heat, you didn't get any of it because they were, like, angry that you were, like...
No, they boo him. They boo him for going to beat up Jerry Lawler, who, I mean, to his despicable credit, Jerry Lawler is an utter cunt here, right? Like, I wanted to see him get beat up. I was glad that Marlena stepped on him in those heels because that had to hurt because that did not look comfortable, right? And I was like, good, step on him harder, stab him, right? Like, that's what I wanted. I wanted him to be injured, especially because this crowd was cheering for him and I found the crowd despicable. I wanted her to like go and step on their faces too. But I think, I mean, Jerry Lawler was definitely working this match as a heel. I think if it would have been somewhere where they were actually cheering for Goldust, I can see what they were going for with this match. But as soon as they figured out that Lawler was getting cheered, none of it worked. Like, none of it worked at all. There's a Lawler for president sign. I mean, I guess we're close enough right now, but fuck's sake.
And I mean, I know that, you know, you and I are on the exact same side. We're just coming at it from slightly different angles. And, like, for me, it's like, I think that if he was a heel and people were booing him and they were cheering Goldust, then it's fine because Goldust is going to get his comeuppance on Lawler. But you did it in a town where everybody was going to cheer Jerry Lawler, so the people at home, are they led to believe that Jerry Lawler's in the right? Because that's a dangerous message to say.
That's how it looks. That's how it looks from the production of this episode.
So,
which is problematic to say the least for me. I was so mad.
When I was watching this, I was just like, yeah, I get why she's going to fucking... I knew you were going to hate it, and I was like... I wonder if she's going to message me about this. And I was like, I'm just not going to message her. I feel like she's going to be like, you made me do this fucking show.
I had to turn it off after this. I was so raging. It took me 4 hours to watch this show because I had to turn it off and like breathe for a little while and be like, all right, I have to turn this fucking program back on, I guess.
Because my problem was when I was I was going, so Jerry Lawler does a promo, which I did like an uncomfortable laugh of like, oh my god, what are they doing? And then I realized, I was like, wait a minute, he wins this though. Like, he wins here.
Yep.
Baffling.
He wins, which means that, you know, great. I'm glad that, you know, the villain triumphs. And also that means we have to get another Jerry Lawler match in this tournament. I don't want it. I don't want to see him. This is the kind of stuff that would make me turn off this show if I didn't have to continue doing this show because I have to continue doing this show. I wouldn't have kept watching it. I would have turned it off right after the promo and switched off and been like, no, I'm done. Like, I think I put on Twitter, I'm like, there are sometimes I'm glad I didn't watch wrestling as a kid. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that I didn't have to watch this. I'm glad that I didn't have to see this being the representation on television. Because I was pretty upset, and I actually tweeted about it, and then one guy told me to stop being so sensitive so he can fuck right off. Like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I'm getting upset about, you know, the implication of taking shots at a 3-year-old girl. That's the thing that upset me about the promo most. Wasn't, like, I mean, the fag comment is completely uncalled for, unnecessary, and disgusting. Mm-hmm. But taking shots at a 3-year-old girl, which is how I took that promo, not okay. Not okay at all. Not okay to imply. Not okay to use as heat for me. Just... none of that is okay, especially when the crowd is cheering it. And I'm sorry, like, yeah, I realize that there's going to be reprehensible stuff that I see as we go through the Attitude Era. I'm not looking forward to it because I know that it's going to make me angry the way that this made me angry, right?
But the hope is that you... I would not say to you, let's do Retro Raw if I didn't think there was stuff you were going to enjoy. You know, because my whole thing is, like, what annoys me is some people just paint the Attitude Era as complete dog shit the whole time. And that's part of the reason I want you to watch it, because I think there's stuff you're going to really like. But there are going to be, like, I don't think there's too many things that are, like, going to make you this angry.
Like, I hope not, because if there are too many things that make me this angry, then it's going to be a problem. But I think that'll be the interesting experiment of it, though, right? Is seeing if the good outweighs the bad and how angry I am, and to see if I would have continued watching it. Because I know women who were wrestling fans at that time who said it was difficult to watch as a woman. Like, the representation and everything is just not stellar. But I don't know, to be told to stop being so sensitive about, like, and to stop being angry because I know it's there, so why get upset? Like, well, yeah, I mean, if I read about horrendous things in history that have happened, I know that they're there. Like, I know that we needed a civil rights movement because people were being treated abhorrently. Should I not get upset about those things? Should I not get upset about the mistreatment of women, of minorities, of gay people? Like, I know that those things are historically there, but it doesn't mean that I shouldn't be upset about it and try and encourage people to not be such assholes in the future.
You should feel however you want to feel about something. Nobody should be able to tell you how to feel or how not to feel. So from there, because there's a lot of it, lot left to cover in this show, we get an interview with Steve Austin backstage, which turns into a Hart Foundation attack, and then we go to break. But we come back, Austin's sort of like go to Shawn Michaels' dressing room to chew him out for like not being there. But then Shawn Michaels has just been beaten up with the Hart Foundation, so the Hart Foundation are like really taking care of Austin and Michaels throughout this whole show, in the hopes that they will not win the tag team championships, essentially.
I just felt a little bad for Flash Funk. I mean, he's trying to make his entrance, and Vince McMahon is very quick to be like, cameras are still on Austin as he goes to confront Shawn Michaels. Don't worry, don't worry. Like, don't pay attention to Flash Funk, who's actually getting in the ring to wrestle. We need to go look at Austin and Michaels again.
Well, if we thought that was bad, though, because we're getting, like, Flash Funk versus Rocky Maivia, and, like, the headbangers come through the crowd with the inflatable King of the Ring chairs and sit on them at commentary, acting goofy. And, like, I had minimal interest in Rocky Maivia versus Flash Funk anyway, but the headbangers just kind of, like, took it away even more.
Well, why were the headbangers even there, other than to sell the chairs? I understand that it's to sell the chairs. But why at this point during this match, other than, again, I know that this match doesn't matter, so that's probably why.
I think you've just answered the point, though. This match doesn't matter, and they wanted them to sell the chairs.
Right, but that's it, right? And so that just screams that this whole entire match doesn't matter. The segment doesn't matter.
But also, this headbangers.
What are the headbangers going to fight Flash Funk and Rocky Maivia?
Yes,
I figured because that seemed to be what they set up.
They fight them on Shotgun Saturday Night. They're building stuff, Sandra.
Well, I'm not going to watch Shotgun Saturday Night just to see the Headbangers versus Flash Funk and Rocky Maivia. Hate to break it to you, WWF, you didn't get me that intrigued. But, I mean, the Headbangers have very little to do out here other than eat popcorn and cackle. And they just sort of decide to attack Rocky and Flesh Funk for some reason. And there's not a DQ either for also reasons. Because refereeing in 1997 is way worse than refereeing in 2017.
Yep.
Like,
bad.
Way bad. Worse. And so
much
frustrating.
Much worse than I remember
like idiots.
Much worse than I remember refereeing being.
And it's not even that they don't pay attention to the rules or know the rules or whatever, but it's the inconsistency of it. Like, sometimes they pay attention to rules. Sometimes they enforce rules that aren't there and disqualify someone for nothing. Like when, who was it that hit the honky-tonk man with the guitar and got DQ'd? Was that Goldust or?
No.
That happened like last week.
Oh God. I can't even remember. Sorry.
I don't remember either. People are angrily yelling at us right now, like, you just reviewed this show.
Oh, who cares?
Who cares? Fucking rockabilly. But, like, but it's just the inconsistency, right? Because, I mean, the Headbangers are attacking both Rocky and Flesh Funk. Like, this match should have just been called off at this point. But the ref just seemed to be like, well, they both got attacked, so I guess we can just continue it. And then Rocky ends up beating Flash Funk with a crossbody after Flash Funk gets hit in the head with a boombox. Like, why is any of this happening? Why is Vince McMahon insisting on calling them party animals over and over? Speaking of the Headbangers, he's just like, they are party animals. Okay, Vince, sure they are. And then Rocky and Flash Funk, after Rocky beats Flash Funk, quote unquote, clean in the middle of the ring, they just sort of hug and come to an agreement and respect each other. So they're going to fight the Headbangers now? Like, what a waste of time. I still don't want the chair.
I want the chair.
I know you do. How much do those chairs go for now, I wonder?
It's actually not. I saw one for like $30 a couple of years ago, and I stupidly didn't buy it. Like a fucking idiot, Sandra. Anyway.
I'm actually kind of amazed that you didn't buy that. Knowing you, like, that sounds like something you would definitely jump on.
Up next, though, we get part two of the Mick Foley interview with Jim Ross. He talks about, you know, his high school lacrosse team and one of his balls swelling up.
Because he played lacrosse without pads and he was goalie and it like hit him in the dick or whatever. Because he had removed his protective cup for some reason.
But then it was
the only time he remembers girls looking in his genital region.
Genital region was a great line. And then it kind of builds to them mention that Mick went to see Jimmy Snuka battle Don Morocco at Madison Square Garden, and it was a night that would change his life. And then that was basically going to tease us into later on, which is really the interesting bit about his sit-down interview. Heart Foundation are hyping King of the Ring about Brett and Sean. And
talking about lions and antelopes again, because I swear his promos are based on The Lion King. I stand by it.
And what's interesting is they're still building Brett versus Sean, Austin versus Pillman, but tonight Owen and Bulldog are gonna beat up Austin and Shawn Michaels and expose them for the losers that they are. So up next we have Vader versus Ahmed Johnson to open up hour two. Ken Shamrock's on commentary, but the stipulation is if Vader wins, he gets Ahmed Johnson's spot in the King of the Ring tournament, because Vader got screwed out of his first round match when Hunter Hearst Helmsley was put in Vader's match against Crush. Very intricate King of the Ring politics going on here. But Ahmed versus Vader, like, I was very excited about this because it's Ahmed versus Vader. Why would I not be excited about this?
I was very excited about this as well.
And it goes like 3 fucking minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very disappointed. Very.
I kind of wanted to see more of it. Also, another question that I had during this match, right? Like, the whole reason that Hunter Hearst Helmsley was put in the match last week was because Vader had gotten taken out and because he wasn't okay to fight last week, right? Mm-hmm. If Vader was going to be fine by this week, why didn't they just have King versus Goldust last week and Vader versus Crush this week instead?
I don't know.
Because the only reason that they could be doing that is that they already chose Hunter Hearst Helmsley to win, and they needed to put him back in the tournament, which makes you wonder why they took him out of the tournament in the first place.
I mean,
I'm angry and I'm baffled.
Everything you're saying is making sense, but I don't have an answer for you. But basically, this match like is very quick, and Vader ends up like running into a spinebuster for the three count at like 3 minutes.
It's just
in,
a spine buster. He doesn't even hit the Pearl River Plunge or anything. He just wins with a spine buster. And I mean,
so
JR tries to sell it like going, that's what power will do for you, folks. Like, you know, he's Ahmed Johnson, so powerful that spine buster just will beat anybody. But like, why doesn't a spine buster beat everybody else when he does it, especially when the other people are smaller and he can spine buster them more? And I don't understand. I mean, it's like Ahmed was so wet at the beginning and he barely even has time to dry off in the match because it's just so short and anticlimactic. I was really bummed because I was looking forward to Ahmed Johnson versus Vader.
So was I. We didn't fucking get it. We go back to Paul Bearer again. Vince McMahon's asking if, you know, will Undertaker return to you? And Paul Bearer says that he can do what nobody else in WWE has been able to do, and that's bring Undertaker to his knees with this secret.
That was a great line. He can do what no giant can do.
It was great. It was building up really well.
I loved it. All of Paul Bearer here, I love all of his little segments. He's like sands through the hourglass, Undertaker, so are the days of your lives. And I popped for that because I watched Days of Our Lives when I was younger. Like probably around this time, actually. Probably around 97 was when I was watching Days of Our Lives. I was like, Days of Our Lives, yay.
When I was in Orlando, there was like a soap opera that was on, and I remember watching like 5 minutes of it, and it was like, it's the worst thing. Like, they're so bad. What are with close-ups all the time?
Everyone's
a close-up all the time. Everyone's a close-up.
It's basically like wrestling backstage segments, but in television form and without the wrestling.
The thing is, so we have Paul Bearer do this promo that's kind of like building up to the secret, and you're like, okay, I'm in, like, give me the secret. And then we have to watch Hunter Hearst Helmsley with China against Rockabilly with the Honky Tonk Man.
No one wants to see this.
Terrible match. And then, like, Rockabilly, like, is about to get the win, and then China pulls him off.
Oh, it was Goldust who hit the Honky Tonk Man with the guitar. I have it in my notes here, because they show it.
Okay, there you go. The crime is, the mystery has been solved.
Yeah.
But then Honky Tonk Man tries to, like, hit Hunter with the guitar, and China stops him and then, like, slams Honky Tonk Man on the floor. And then Triple H pedigrees Rockabilly for the win in a very short match.
I mean, I'm glad that it was short. I'm super into China, though. Can I just say, I'm so into China. I love her pulling Rockabilly's leg and pulling him out of the ring. And then she looks so pleased with herself for helping. And then Honky Tonk Man getting slammed by China is fantastic. Excellent. I love her just battering the shit out of the Honky Tonk Man. She's my new favorite. I want her to continue to beat up the Honky Tonk Man, except for that probably means I have to see more Hunter Hursomsley versus Rockabilly. So maybe I don't want that. But what was baffling to me was, like, at the beginning, they talk about Hunter being from Greenwich, Connecticut, and they show images of him drinking with ladies and shopping for jewelry and all of this stuff. And they're still trying to play him up as this blue blood character, mm-hmm. which doesn't really seem to fit anymore. Like, I get that he has a bodyguard and maybe she's, you know, his muscle for hire, but maybe it's just because I know where Triple H goes somewhat. Like, I don't really know the time frame so well. I know that by December they're DX because there's a pay-per-view called Degeneration X, but I didn't understand why this match was happening, why they were still trying to play him up as such a blue blood when it seems like that's not so much his thing anymore. And also, why is this happening? They're both heels. Like, who am I supposed to cheer for? China? Because that's who I am cheering for.
I don't really know who you're supposed to cheer for, to be honest.
Like, I mean, I would say this is the biggest waste of time on the show, but it's not even, because Lawler exists, and also Headbangers and Flash Funk and Rocky Maivia, who I almost just called Rockabilly, but no. Rocky and Rockabilly and all of them, these were not the compelling parts of this episode.
No, they're not. Undertaker talks about, you know, the secret again, so he's kind of still pondering. Sable humps the King of the Ring inflatable chair to try and sell it. I love that they're like, yeah, okay, so Mark Merrow can't wrestle. We'll just get Sable to hump a chair.
Pretty much. I mean, she just comes out in her, like, pleather getup or whatever. And
yeah, whatever you call it.
Grinds on a chair for a little while. Like, I was afraid she was going to pop it.
But we go
JR
back...
makes sure to note to us that the chair is a great value, but does not come with Sable. They made that very clear.
Which I thought made it more valuable, to be honest, but that's just...
Yeah.
We go back to Mick Foley, talking about hitchhiking to Madison Square Garden to see Jimmy Snuka splash in Don Morocco. That was kind of what created Dude Love. He talks about meeting Shawn Michaels for the first time, and he always wanted to be what Shawn was. Very interesting stuff. We see, you know, the Dude Love home videos where he cuts the promo and jumps off the roof at his house. JR talks about his trainer, and Dominic DiNucci, and Foley talks about traveling 800 miles to train with him and in his Ford Fairmont, and the Dude Love character never came to be. And then that kind of is like, you know, Cactus Jack was born, and that's going to take us into the next part of the interview next week. I thought this segment, I think, like, people underestimate how much this particular segment made Mick Foley what he became.
And I can definitely see it. I think he is excellent here. I love just the little touches. He's so good at this. He's like, you know, the first time I met Shawn Michaels, you know him? Like, he's asking JR, you know him? Mm-hmm. You know Shawn Michaels? And it's just, it makes it feel like a conversation and feel like a personal touch. It doesn't feel like he's just reading lines. It feels like he's telling his story, and it makes him relatable. And, you know, he talks about, you know, I made a movie where I was a wrestler, and he, you know, talks about getting to be a character and be larger than life. And then when he talks about, you know, they're next week, they're going to show us some of Cactus Jack, and they've just been building this whole thing, right? Like, he's young Mickey Foley found out that he could handle pain, and so leading to the Cactus Jack stuff, I know where it goes, obviously I do, as does a lot of the audience even watching this in 1997. I assume people have seen some of the Cactus Jack stuff, and I don't know, had anyone seen this Dude Love footage before? Like, was this a known thing?
Nobody had seen it,
right? Which is fascinating, because I've seen it so many times. So watching this, it's like, I mean, I've seen these interview segments, but I've also seen that footage of Mick Foley. I've seen it in multiple contexts. I own a couple Mick Foley DVDs. Like, this is stuff that it's like, okay, yeah, this is the story everybody knows. So I guess I didn't have a major reaction to the video because it's a story that I know so well. But I can imagine in 1997, this is such a departure from... Sorry, my
Why
phone is
Emma's, Emma's theme? I was like, am I hearing Emma's theme in my head?
Yes, because I did not mute my phone, is why. Sorry about that. But no, like, it was interesting watching this, and it's such a departure from what we've seen of Mankind. Because Mankind up till this point has seemed kind of one note. Like, he's been fairly fascinating in that, I guess, he eats rats or something. But
also, like, you look at, like I was saying, I think it was last week I was talking about, like, the journey of Mick Foley in 1997 has been very dull. You know, he wasn't involved in the Royal Rumble stuff. He wasn't involved in anything exciting leading up to WrestleMania. He's in the tag team with Vader, and then he kind of has to take Vader's spot at Revenge of the Taker. Like, he's really just kind of fizzled out.
He's been really dull, and I hate that because I want to be more into him than I am. But
oh, you're gonna?
Yeah, and this interview actually does a lot to make me more interested in him. Also, this is super weird.
That's what happened to everybody else at this point in time. What you're feeling about this is what everybody else felt at this point in time.
Which is cool. Like, it's cool to see something like this actually working and seeing it in real time. And even though I don't necessarily have such a strong reaction because I've seen it before, it's interesting to see it in context and in the context of him having been so dull and not really connecting to him, even though I know what he becomes, and obviously I have great respect for Mick Foley. Can I just say, it's very weird because the videos that he shows, like the Dude Love videos, he looks a lot like Mojo Rawley. Like, facially, they look very similar, and it kind of creeped me out.
I mean, I kind of want to move on from that, to be honest. Any comparison of Mick Foley to Mojo Rawley is not something I want to explore.
It was just very weird. And he was wearing all bright colors, and it made me cringe
Maybe
for a little bit.
Mojo,
but then he was
his,
great.
Got his look from. Did love it.
Maybe. Maybe it is.
But next
I'm just saying, compare them side by side. They look very similar.
But next week, we're going to get the next part of the interview, and it's, you know, these are just great stuff. And I'm glad they hold up watching them back now, 20 years later.
Yeah.
Main event time is Owen Hart and the British Bulldog defending the tag team titles against Shawn Michaels and Stone Cold Steve Austin. This is Shawn's first match back since he lost his smile back in February. The Hart Foundation is at the top of the ramp. The match is about 10 minutes long. And no matter what happens, you know, the Hart Foundation have tried everything, but in the end, Shawn Michaels manages to hit the sweet chin music on the Bulldog. Even though Austin's the legal man, Austin jumps on to Bulldog, gets the 1-2-3, and they are the new tag team champions. The Hart Foundation run in, start battering Shawn Michaels. Austin couldn't really care less because he sees that Brett's there, and he just takes his title belt, goes up to the ramp, and just tackles Brett and starts hitting his knee, which is obviously going to be the story for why Brett can't wrestle at King of the Ring. The Hart Foundation go to chase him away, and Shawn's just like dead in the ring, and we've got new tag team champions. What are your thoughts?
I loved this. I absolutely loved this. I think it's very rare that we get really good wrestling on Raw, mm-hmm. and that's something that I've said makes Retro Raw tougher to watch sometimes, because I really like story, and I like interesting, you know, story and drama and that kind of thing, but I also sometimes when I'm watching wrestling, I just want to see some good wrestling, right? Mm-hmm. And this was really good. Really, really good.
And with these four guys, it'd be hard to be bad.
It would be. It would be very hard to be bad. And I'm glad that it wasn't, right? Like, there's some really great spots. And, you know, I talk a lot of shit about Shawn Michaels on this show. Like, a lot. And mm-hmm. I think it's all deserved because it is. But, I mean, Shawn Michaels is a great performer. There's a fantastic spot in the match where Michaels rebounds off the rope. Bulldog just smooth as butter, gets him up into a gorilla press, and then throws him onto the ropes, and he gets crotched. So I love the spot because it was really kind of innovative and great. And also Shawn Michaels had to land dick first on a rope, so that was enjoyable. And, you know, there's another great spot. Shawn does these rebound into move spots really well, is what I kind of figured out in this match, because he rebounds at one point into like a perfect belly-to-belly suplex by Owen. It's just so crisp. It's so lovely. I was just like, yes, good wrestling. And like I said, I didn't know that Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels won this match.
What was your reaction?
I didn't remember that happening. I lost my shit. I thought it was a mistake at first. I was waiting for it to get overturned because I was just like, no, this doesn't, wait, what? Like, what is happening here? And there was so many good spots in the match, like blind tags, like Hebner doesn't see Sean tagging Austin at first and won't let Austin in the ring, and Sean's been in there forever, so he really needs a tag. I was finding myself getting kind of behind the idea of Sean and Steve Austin winning, just because the Hart Foundation has been so dastardly and whatnot, and I love Owen and Bulldog as well. But I was just, I don't know, the moment of it, and this is, a testament to them, right? Like, the moment of it, I was like, this would be so exciting if it actually changed hands, but I don't think it does. And then, sweet chin music to the Bulldog, Austin pins him. I actually rewound to be like, but was he legal? Oh my gosh, I bet he wasn't the legal man. I bet they're going to overturn it. But they didn't, because they actually were the legal men. Steve Austin pins the British Bulldog, and they're the new tag team champions. And I mean, the Hart Foundation being absolutely just raging about this, obviously, beating up Shawn Michaels, beating him to a pulp. I love that Austin goes and attacks Bret Hart immediately, because that makes the most sense, right? And again, it seems like one of the themes of Retro Raw has been, we try to build to Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels. We don't build to Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels. Something more interesting happens instead. I'm still more interested in Steve Austin versus Bret Hart than I am in Bret versus Shawn. I don't even know what happens at King of the Ring. I don't remember what matches take their place or what they actually end up doing. But I'm way more interested in this Shawn Michaels-Steve Austin dynamic, too, than I would be between Bret and Shawn, which is weird because the real-life tension between Bret and Shawn should make that the more compelling feud. But for some reason, it doesn't. I don't know if they're just too hostile toward one another to get the story across properly on television.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that Sean and Austin being a team kind of rejuvenated things a little bit. I think Owen and Bulldog are good as a team, but I think winning the titles here was a good idea.
They've been the champions since we started Retro Raw as well.
They won them the night before we started.
Okay, so I've seen their whole reign basically.
Yeah, they won them at Mind Games, and then we started covering them the night after.
Okay.
We come back from the break and Austin and Michaels are arguing because they've got the Legion of Doom next week now. That's their...
Because they said, yeah, if we win, then we'll give the Legion of Doom a title shot.
But it's time... I think that the tag title match was probably the best match on Raw since the European title final, the one in Bulldog.
Yeah. Can I just say, though, how much I love Steve Austin being like, I won the tag team championships. I did it all by myself. And Shawn Michaels is like, are you fucking kidding me? Because, I mean, not only, obviously, they were a team, so they won it together, but Shawn Michaels delivered the super kick that allowed Steve Austin to pin the Bulldog. So not only is it like, no, we were a team, and I was in the match forever and couldn't tag you in, but also he delivered the actual finishing move that ended the match, and Steve Austin's like, I did it all by myself out there. I didn't see you helping me.
Yep. It was pretty great. So then we get the final segment of the night. Paul Bearer, you know, he's meeting Vince McMahon, and you know he's talking about the Undertaker needs to come out. Undertaker comes out, and he tells Paul Bearer that he absolutely despises, loathes him for what he has to do tonight. Undertaker says that he hopes that everyone who loves him can forgive him, and Undertaker, like, he goes for Paul Bearer and backs him in a corner, but then he lets go, and the Undertaker drops to one knee as he is now the servant of Paul Bearer.
Which I don't really understand, because wasn't the whole thing that Paul Bearer was like, I'm going to reveal the secret if you don't become my servant, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he reveals the secret. Because he says, you know, on that morning, on that cold, drizzly morning, the holes were prepared. I was standing over the graveside of your mother and father. I was the mortician that day. Do we know that he was the mortician of Undertaker's parents already? Is that a thing?
No.
That's been known.
The only reason that you think everything's... You know what the secret's going to be anyway. People don't know what the secret is yet. Nobody knows that there's a Kane.
But he says there wasn't two graves, there were three graves.
Yeah, but nobody knows what that is yet.
But he's still revealing part of the secret.
But he's not revealed, like, the full. He's revealing part of it to basically kind of force him to have to.
Okay, so he revealed just enough that the Undertaker was like, "Fine, I need to do this."
Exactly.
Okay.
It's like if you're dangling someone off a cliff, and you, like, you know, you're dangling them with two hands, and you let one of your hands go, and there's one left, and so it's your last chance.
Okay. I mean, I don't know, part of it's out. Some people could investigate and say, wait, there were three graves? I wonder who that third grave could be.
But I was intrigued because I thought that you would be more interested in Undertaker, that given that Paul Bearer now gets to control him.
I mean...
Then you would be just watching him kind of go about doing his thing.
I am more interested in Paul Bearer controlling him because I love Paul Bearer, so...
By default...
I'm sorry, like, I would love to lie and say, oh my gosh, Undertaker was so intriguing here.
No, I didn't expect you to, but I just thought, I thought that the Undertaker's act would become more interesting to you because of the Paul Bearer aspect of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I'm going to like seeing him on screen with Paul Bearer more than I'm going to like seeing him on screen alone, for sure. And I mean, the Undertaker going, Paul, I hate you with all that I am. I loathe you. I despise you for what you've done to me and what you're forcing me to do tonight. And although the hounds of hell may bay, what the hell are you talking about, Undertaker? At the secret that your attorney will reveal, because you're not going to be able to. I only hope that the ones that love me, the ones that loved me in the past, will be able to forgive what I must do tonight. I mean, talk about soap opera.
Wrestling.
And stilted delivery wrestling. But yeah, I mean, he grabs him like he's going to choke slam him. Paul Bearer is just like, no, and then he just sort of stands back up, kneels, and I guess I didn't really get it. I was kind of like, so is he on his side now? Like, it just sort of goes off the air with the Undertaker kneeling. So I guess now Paul Bearer is going to control him. Is that the thing?
Yes.
Because I mean, I know it doesn't last, but.
Lasts for a while.
I mean, I know that it lasts for, you know, a time. Until it doesn't anymore. Until Kane.
What did you think of this episode overall with your thumb?
I think overall, thumbs... Like, I hate the Jerry Lawler thing. I hate it so much. And I love the Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels tag team situation way more than I thought I would. It was actually like an easy-ish episode to watch, but I'm probably going to have to go thumbs in the middle just because the Lawler thing and Flashpunk and Myvia and Rockabilly and all of that exists. Like, my gut reaction would be to say thumbs up, but then I think about some of the other stuff that happened on the episode and I'm like, I hate this.
Yeah, my thumb is middling to up. It's not fully up. It's not fully in the middle. It was an easy watch for me, but there was some dross in there. I'm kind of in between. But where can people find you, Sandra, on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. And if you want to hear our retro pay-per-view reviews, we talk about Cold Day in Hell. We're going to talk about King of the Ring. When that happens, we're going to talk about all the pay-per-views on patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, in addition to interviews and classic content and all sorts of stuff, multiple levels of pledging, so you can pledge different amounts of money for different amounts of content, basically. Loads of stuff, so if you can't get enough of us, there's more to be had? That sounds weird.
There's more to be had, and next week's the King of the Ring review, so there you go.
That's next week already? Fuck's sake.
Yep. It'll be June 8th is King of the Ring. So,
it's just coming up so quickly.
It is. Thanks for listening, everybody. We hope that you we're going to get back on schedule with us, and we appreciate you sticking with us. Have a good week. I'm coughing, and we'll see you soon.
Bye.